Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Chad Riley.
Hello, hello. It's 100 degrees here in Sacramento, California, and we're still here.
That we are, and Spencer Williams.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
That's it. End of statement. Oh, okay.
There you go.
End of statement.
End of statement.
Well, we got an interesting movie to talk about today as we got a chance to check out the press screening of Mission Impossible Fallout. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Chad, give them a little bit of that info.
Okie dokie. Even if they disavow all knowledge of our existence, the Filmlosophers will still be brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios.
This man said okie dokie.
He did.
Okie dokie. You don't need to steal a knock list to access the podcast. Simply subscribe to The Filmlosophers on your favorite streaming platform, and new episodes will come your way each Wednesday on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and or Audio Boom, and a whole host of others. Because we're everywhere.
We are.
Don't let the conversation self-destruct after this episode. Be sure to engage with us on social media any day of the week.
He said self-destruct. Mm.
Like our page on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
Did you say twerk.com?
I said Twitter.
Oh, just making sure. It sounded like you said twerk.
Twitter.
Twerk.com.
I would not like to go to twerk.com.
Neither would I. That's why I don't want to send our listeners there.
I would not like to go to twerk.com.
So twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
Not twerk.com.
True.
Once you survive every impossible mission imaginable, you're going to want something thrilling to fill your time. Maybe we suggest our episode archive. More than 100 episodes are ready for you to listen in. And you can access them all on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got a website.
Filmlosophers.com.
We are proud to show it. Just like Spencer over here in his twerk.com.
That's
okay,
terrible.
It's Facebook, Twitter, and filmlosophers.com. Nothing else.
Well, I'll tell you what, we need to jump out of that situation because I don't know what you put us in, but let's dive right into this movie that we are talking about.
Oh, boy.
And that is Mission Impossible Fallout. The film debuts this Friday, but we got an early chance to see it. And yeah, we can't wait to talk about it. So before we do, Chad, give us a little bit of that official synopsis.
Sure,
goodness.
And before I give you the synopsis, I do want to just preface it with, we did get a chance to see all 2.5 hours of this film early. Nearly 2.5 hours. All right, that being said.
We're going to talk about that.
When an IMF mission ends badly and Solomon Lane escapes custody, the world is faced with dire consequences.
Dire.
As Ethan Hunt takes it upon himself to fulfill his original briefing, the CIA begins to question his loyalty and his motives. Hunt finds himself in a race against time, hunted by assassins and former allies while trying to prevent a global catastrophe.
This song is like really rocking.
I feel like this is the best part of the movie right here.
Now, Spence, let's not give away your entire...
And it was part of the trailer, not the movie itself. Brilliant!
Directed by Christopher McQuarrie. The film stars Tom Cruise, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, Rebecca Ferguson, Sean Harris, Michelle Moynihan, and Alec Baldwin, as well as new faces in the franchise such as Henry Cavill, Angela Bassett, and Vanessa Kirby.
And Henry Cavill's mustache.
That's right. Everything you didn't
see. The faciest new face in the bunch.
Everything you didn't see in the Justice League, you're seeing it in this film. So
yes.
this film... actually had 3,000 setups, 13 helicopters, 6 pregnancies, 5 hiatuses, 4 weeks of aerial photography, 3 continents, 2 winters, and a broken ankle. One broken ankle.
Wow.
Yeah, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah.
That blew up in a hail of smoke.
Crazy.
Yeah, if you think about it.
I mean, it took over a year for them to make this movie.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. This film probably was like in production for at least 2 years. Like, I would say at least 2 years.
Yeah, in some form of production, yeah.
Yeah, because with everything that they do in this film and every place that they go to, it's insane to think if this was ever going to... You know, anybody ever thought this was going to be a small production. So, and as Chad mentioned, at 2 hours and 27 minutes, this is the longest Mission Impossible film to date. And you feel it. Like,
yeah, you do. You really do.
So we got a chance to check out this film at a press screening, at an early screening, and... this is one of those types of films that has been around for quite a while. I believe the first film came out in
96.
96.
Ooh, yes. I was going to guess 97.
I was going to guess 98, but I mean, hey.
96. I remember that first film too. I really liked it.
Oh yeah. When the first film came out and you had Emilio Estevez was still relevant at the time. Because he's in the film.
I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, he was...
He was in the film. That doesn't mean he was relevant.
It was a few years after the last Mighty Ducks.
He wasn't in the film that long either. He was in the film for like 20 minutes.
I know. I mean, who doesn't want to see Emilio Estevez
die? He just was in the film long enough to give him a piece of gum.
That is true.
And then get like totally like...
Impaled.
Face impaled on the elevator.
It also had John Voight. It had Ving Rhames post his success after Pulp Fiction and some other films. But this film franchise, so obviously has been around for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Plus, if you think about it,
22.
So
22 years,
22 years.
Good heavens.
That's awful.
Tom Cruise has been doing this for 22 years.
Running and running and running and running and running and running.
So we got a chance to check out the latest installment in this franchise and, we're buffs of action movies. We like... See, I think I kind of sound like a broken record when I say this every time we come across opportunities like this, but I just want to, you know, repeat the fact that we here at the Filmosophers, we enjoy great storytelling. It's one of the key things that we always find as one of the high points of any film.
Absolutely.
You could have a film that's visually stunning. You could have a film that has a star-studded cast. You could have a film that like is so intelligent and so well done, but if it doesn't have a great story to that runs right through the center of it, then it kind of loses all of that. It's like it's all for naught. So that we feel is like one of the high marks for any great film, plain and simple.
Definitely. No matter what the genre is, you know, you keep things in mind like this is a summer blockbuster film. We understand that. It's not going for, I mean, unless like visual effects or fight choreography or something, like I don't know how many different categories they have in the, what is it, the scientific and technical awards?
Yeah,
the ones you don't get to see on the telecast. You know, I don't know how many other categories there are, but
the one that has the wheelchair ramp for everybody who's hurt themselves on set.
But I mean, you know, you keep in mind like this isn't going to be a best actor nomination. It's not going to be a best director nomination. It's not going to be a best screenplay nomination.
No.
It's a summer blockbuster, but we keep that in mind when we evaluate films.
Of course.
You know, what lane they're kind of moving in, and that's sort of our starting point.
Oh, yeah, completely. This, like we said, this film franchise has been going on for 22 years. There's 5 previous films to this particular film, and it's had its ups and downs. We actually talked about this.
Are you getting choked up?
I am. Oh, my gosh.
We actually talked about this?
We talked about this the other day. No, we talked about this yesterday, and we were kind of recounting all the films that came prior to this part 6 film. And obviously, like Chad said, the first one was a great piece of work. It was an awesome film. Second one, not so much. Second one was
terrible.
Extremely just...
Wah, 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 wah,
exactly.
Wah.
Over-stylized. Very John Woo. The third film kind of brought it back, in my mind, in terms of like to the heart of what this franchise is
for
about.
For real.
And then 4, 5, and 6 kind of create the story that 6 leads up to. Because
there's definitely more from the third one through to this one. There's like a definitive building of a narrative that's starting to congeal in a certain way. Because for so long, you've had just Ethan Hunt and maybe a couple of familiar faces along the way, but mostly new faces because most of them end up not making it.
Yeah.
So to have several characters carry through, I mean, you've got Simon Pegg, you've got Ving Rhames, Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a number of faces that have been not in just one other Mission Impossible film, but several.
Yeah.
And they've actually survived to this point, so they all have some form of continuity, which at the outside, it's nice.
Yeah.
What you do with those pieces, we'll see.
Well, and actually, the fact of the matter that's really crazy is the fact that Ving Rhames and Tom Cruise have been the only two individuals who have been in every single one of these films. All six films. So, Spence, let us know. Because here's the funny thing. We all may have seen most of the films, or if not all the films, prior to going into part six. But Mr. Williams here has decided to take it upon himself to not see any.
Okay, there's like five
excuses.
I don't want to be in my room all day watching five different movies.
But you'll sit in there and watch anime for 5 hours.
That's way different. That has nothing to do with it. How dare you bring him?
How dare you? So you haven't seen any of the films prior to this one?
No,
none of them. You haven't seen? Well, I could probably guess you may have seen like a piece here and there of any of the films.
No, I've seen nothing. So closest I've come to watching a Mission Impossible movie was the N64 Mission Impossible game.
That was horrible. Had the worst graphics in the entire history.
It was the N64!
Yeah, and you couldn't make out who was what and what was who. Okay, so the extent of your knowledge in this particular area just was limited to video games, is what I'm hearing.
Half
is what I'm hearing.
I didn't even finish that one, so it's only half that.
So you didn't even... Okay, so your knowledge is pretty much zero to nil.
So 50% of a terrible game.
Yeah. Yeah,
adaptation.
So I got to like,
out of a
22-year
franchise is what I'm hearing.
I got to the laser room where he's going down the tunnel and stuff. So I got through that part. It was so stupid.
Yeah,
so many lasers.
No, yeah, no. Just stop. Stop. So here's the thing, though.
So it was very fresh for you.
Yeah.
So you didn't know any of the story going in.
No, I had no idea.
Did you find yourself confused?
Like, the first scene, yes, but after that, no, which is very surprising because I felt like I should have been confused for, like, at least half the movie.
Well, we're gonna reflect back on the lack of Spencer's knowledge in this particular aspect because... As much as Spencer doesn't know about this film,
and he's like, we really want to hover here for a while.
We're gonna poke at this bear for a little bit longer.
That's all you do. That should be your middle name by now. Eddie poke at the bear.
poke at the bear? Did you say poketh? Are you becoming Shakespearean on me? Eddie poketh the bear.
Legit.
So as much as Spence doesn't know about this franchise, on the opposite spectrum, myself and Chad have seen every one of these films. In fact, after we got home from the theater, we actually saw another recap of all the other five films. And I think it's safe to say Tom Cruise is not from Earth. Because the man is...
I think it's safe to say Tom Cruise is an alien.
Because the man is 56 Earth years old. And he's still jumping off buildings and running like he's sprinting in the Olympics or something.
Well, and like skydiving out of airplanes to get the right shot and all kinds of insanity.
Is there... So here's the thing, and I was thinking about this on the drive over here. One of the things that we talked about last week in lesson 122 about Skyscraper is we talked about the usage of The Rock in the film and his pretty much durability to to pretty much keep himself going and the perseverance and just him being inhuman, ultimately. I think Tom Cruise has been riding that wave of, you know, indestructibility for the last all of these films.
Yeah.
And not just all of these films, but every film. Because it seems like no matter what Tom Cruise does, he comes out like his hair still looks nice and he looks all like there's a scene in this film where he gets like beat within an inch of his life in a bathroom and walks out and his hair is like neatly combed and he's got, you know, this nice jacket all whatever it's not possible. Tom Cruise
just need a lot of hair gel.
It's like, what are they doing over there at the Scientology Center? Like, is there something that we don't know?
Well, from their point of view, yes.
Well, from my point of view...
Well, from their point of view, yes.
It's like, it must be like their gym training or whatever that they do over there. I don't know. But this guy always
clones.
Seems like...
It's all about clones.
Ah, that's what it is. We're having a prestige thing here every time...
The real attack of the clones.
Every time one goes down, they're like, oh, no, Tom Cruise is back at the trailer. And then another one just walks out as they remove the body of the previous one. Telling you, don't look at me like I'm crazy because you were thinking it. I just said it.
Oh, no. That's perfectly logical. Tom Cruise has 20 clones in the back trunk of his car.
I mean, hey, if it fits, why not?
He transfers his consciousness.
See?
Each time.
Exactly. You laugh, but you are like the king of bad conspiracies.
I mean, he's going for what is it? Theta level, right? Or isn't that like the highest level in Scientology? Theta
level? Spence, is it?
I don't know. What are you asking me?
I don't know. It's all shrouded in secrecy.
That's right. I'm going to go on one of their ships. So kind of jumping into this movie, let's go ahead and talk about expectations because, I mean, let's just be honest. I know what my expectations were, but I want to hear everybody else's like normal expectations before I get to my weird one. So let's start with Chad.
So you're guaranteeing that you have weird expectations for this movie.
I have a weird expectation or more like a hope.
I find that compelling. My expectation going into this film, so I despised Mission Impossible 2. I thought it was utter garbage. I did not like it at all. Years later, Mission Impossible 3 completely rebounded. Like, yeah. Aside from how much I loved the first one because it was the first one.
Yeah.
And it kind of set the ground rules and it there wasn't another one before it, aside from the TV show, obviously, from which it the entire franchise is derived. The third one is my favorite. The third one had a compelling, menacing bad guy, had high stakes, had that extra personal touch because he was in love with Julia, Michelle Monaghan's character, and she was kidnapped and, you know, all this stuff. So there was a lot that went into that film that just really registered well with me. I thought, man, to go from so disappointing to just completely outstanding, like 85% of the film is outstanding. Plus, it had that ridiculously long running sequence. And then the fourth and the fifth one were decent follow-ups. They were sequels that were watchable, entertaining, decent stakes. Nothing really approached the level of the third film. So by this point, I'm thinking, okay, well, it's either going to be, for this one, for Fallout.
Yeah.
My thinking going into the theater was, this is either going to be the next MI2 or the next MI3.
Yeah.
Like, they've had a couple of really, you know, decently strong sequel, like, world-building kind of stories that they've done. And now this one's either going to super flop or it's going to super succeed. And that's what I expected going in.
Spence, with your lack of knowledge on the previous films, what were some of your expectations coming into this film?
Well, I spent most of my time trying to remember if I had, like, what was the last Tom Cruise movie I had even seen?
Oh, my gosh. Don't say Top Gun.
Cocktail? I don't know. I couldn't find an answer for that. So I walked
Interview
in.
With a Vampire.
Oh, gosh.
So, anyway. Like, most of my experience with this film franchise comes from really just the trailers for the movie.
That's honest.
My gosh.
Mean, we can't fault you.
We can. Yes, we can.
Which, after watching the trailer for this one, I have questions on, like, how much of those trailers actually, you know, are truthful.
Spence.
But we'll leave that here nor there. So I was like, okay, let's see, like, you know, summer movie. Let's see some stuff blow up. Let's see Tom Cruise run and hold
Tom
on to something
Cruise run.
Impossible or like the side of a plane, like from the last one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. So,
Spence.
What? Those were my expectations. You asked a question. I answered.
Okay.
That's how this podcast works.
Yeah. Okay.
What were your expectations, Eddie?
Yeah, let's hear the weird ones.
So my expectations. So to kind of preface what I'm going to say, I was similar to Chad. I was a huge fan of the first one. I couldn't stand the second one until I got old enough to realize how campy the second one was. And then I just watched it for the laugh factor. between like the slow motion flying doves to the ridiculous
so stupid
fighting on motorcycles, like a motorcycle joust with their bodies. It was just ridiculous, and you just laughed endlessly every time.
Which
you watched
it wasn't made that way. Like it wasn't played for campiness. It just happens to be.
Yeah, they were taking themselves extremely serious. I just
didn't. And that was another one of the productions that went on forever.
Yeah,
like they did massive reshoots for months on that one, and it still turned out terrible.
It did. And then, like Chad said, the third one came about, and with the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, who played an incredible bad guy in this movie.
So good.
From the first, like, 2 minutes of the film with that opening sequence of him threatening to shoot his wife if he doesn't tell him where the rabbit's foot is, and just the intensity of that, it's so great. Like, that's great filmmaking. In that first, like, 3 minutes of that film, him trying to bargain with him, and just you just see the descent in terms of from having control to having no control by the time he gets to one. And oh my gosh, I could go on about the third Mission Impossible film in such great detail.
Well, needless to say, Philip Seymour Hoffman as a Mission Impossible villain,
it made
sense.
It
played against type, and that's what made it so good. He was so good in that role.
We're going to have to show you that particular film.
Yeah, I would say of the other five, that's the one to watch.
Yeah. And then, like Chad said, four and five were okay. I mean, they weren't as great as part three. They didn't thrill me or capture me as much as three did.
Sure.
But I still, they were still good. So here is my one expectation for the film. Nay, not expectation, my one hope. And my hope was that Ethan Hunt would die. I was finally waiting for this man to die because he defies all logic and physics in every single other one of his films.
Yep.
And he, even in other, like, it's Ethan Hunt against the Mummy, and it's Ethan Hunt as Jack Reacher. It's like he plays the same person. I'm like,
yeah.
I just want to see Tom Cruise die in a movie. You know?
I just want to see Tom Cruise die in a movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the man is, I mean, you take The Rock. Going back to last week's conversation, you take The Rock. The Rock hasn't been, like, too ridiculous in some of his films. Like, in some of his films, he looks tore up. Like, at the end of Rampage, he's, totally messed up.
Well, 25% of what he should be messed
up.
Yeah,
of course. Yes. I mean, he also, because he was
still very durable. But he's The Rock.
He's The Rock. I mean,
Tom Cruise is like 4.5 feet tall.
Yes. And
maybe a little bit more than that. I'm probably exaggerating, but he's like not The Rock. The Rock is a mountain of a human being.
Oh, 100%. I was listening to last week's episode on the drive over here, and I'm like, man, Chad had a little bit of a man crush on The Rock. He's like, 'cause that is a mountain of a man.
Dude,
that is just,
he is a
tall.
Sorry. He's not playing a role. He is himself.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
They just give him different names.
You got to check out Lesson 122 after this episode. Get it if you get a chance. But no, that was my strongest, hope. Expectation / hope / wish / prayer / whatever you want to call
it. Sure.
I wanted to see Tom Cruise die. I wanted to see Ethan Hunt bite the bullet. I wanted to see him finally fail.
That is actually valid. It would be interesting to see in a movie called Fallout to see a truly failed mission.
Yeah.
That does not resolve itself by the end.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to see. And all angsty and ungood feelingsy.
Yeah, Spence, you catch all that?
Yeah, no, that actually sounds great. I feel like that's a problem with a lot of movies. It's where, like, the good guys always have to win. Like, that's one of the reasons why I liked Infinity War so much, They didn't at the end, and that was kind of cool. Now, I don't want all movies to be like that because that's just depressing.
Right.
But texture.
It's the flavor of life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
wow. That was so philosophical.
That was very philosophical. That was very filmlessophical.
Filmlessophical.
So, obviously, we're not going to talk about spoilers on the film. Because it hasn't debuted yet.
Don't worry, it spoils itself in 20 minutes.
It does.
Which is bizarre. Like, what's with all these movies just broadcasting what they're doing while you're sitting there watching it?
Maybe it says something about the audience.
Well, I was going to say.
Plus, it's within the range that you can go out and get a refund. Like, you can.
That's true.
You can watch that little bit.
You make an excellent point and say, I don't like it, and they'll refund your money.
And you'll know what would have happened already.
It's true.
But you would not have seen the action sequences, which is the reason for seeing a Mission Impossible movie.
Exactly.
There's some really great ones.
And before we jump into the review a bit more, Spencer actually has the soundboard, so hopefully he'll use it, because we all know how Spencer likes to use that soundboard.
Wow.
Well.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob. So jumping into the film, obviously we're introduced to the whole slew of characters in this film. You got everybody from everybody. You got Ethan Hunt, played by Tom Cruise. You got Ving Rhames' character. This film literally brings back a lot of people from the first. No, actually the last one.
Yeah, it's from 3 to 6. It's pretty continuous.
Yeah,
honestly, I mean the only thing that's really missing here. Is
Jeremy Renner.
I mean, to a certain extent, like Paula Patton didn't end up dying in
part two.
Ghost Protocol.
Oh, you're talking about part four.
But she's not with them anymore. She hasn't been. You know, Rebecca Ferguson, who was in Rogue Nation, is back here in Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
She's not part of IMF, but she's a continuing character. But Jeremy Renner mysteriously is totally absent. And not ever referenced.
No, it's like he never existed.
But the rest of them, I mean, like Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Alec Baldwin even.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin.
Who had really a very minor role before.
Yeah. And then obviously some new characters into the fray. You got Angela Bassett, who plays CIA director Erica Sloan. You have Henry Cavill, Superman.
The Man of Steel.
Playing, was he an agent? CIA agent.
He was a CIA
or operative.
Special ops assassin agent. Guy.
Yeah, August Walker. That's a really interesting name, August
His
Walker.
His name was August Walker?
His name, you could have called him Augie. Hey, Augie. don't look at me. Like
then you get missiles from the bristles.
Oh, see, that's where you come in with the. You know what? Thank you. You're supposed to be on this. So you get Henry Cavill with the full-on mustache, finally. It doesn't have to be CGI'd out. And you have all of them going after this individual known as Solomon Lane. Solomon Lane, played by Sean Harris, is apparently the bad guy from Part 5.
Not apparently. He is. We just didn't remember him.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's one of the things that kind of threw me, because we had actually talked about it after the film. I didn't remember him at all in the previous film.
No.
So I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to be like, are we supposed to know him from somewhere? It wasn't until you had mentioned after the film, you're like, so was that guy like the bad guy in part 5?
Right.
And I'm like, thank you. Somebody said it.
Okay, I feel like those are the questions I should have been asking.
Yeah, but you hadn't seen any of them.
Yes, exactly.
But that says something for like how much continuity is wise versus how much continuity is unnecessary, I think.
True.
Because obviously he didn't make a big enough impression in Rogue Nation. And quite frankly, I didn't remember most of Rogue Nation. The thing that I remember the most out of Rogue Nation is Rebecca Ferguson's character.
It's true.
And the fact that she's in this one as well. But then even that's a bit of an oddity. Because we watched the recap. Like, she was intricately connected with the bad guy in Rogue Nation. And yet, neither one of us remembered him.
Yeah, like, I remember her whole thing of, like, her being a double agent or, you know, whatever, triple agent, whatever she was at the time in the film. But I never remembered who she was working for.
Nope.
And it's like, this doesn't make any sense. I don't know. He seemed very, like, nefarious in the trailers, and he seems very, like, evil throughout, like,
well,
this entire film.
This is the thing that really bothered me. from hearing the trailer for Fallout, I cannot stand the way he uses his voice. And I can't believe that I don't remember that from Rogue Nation. Like, if he talked that way in Rogue Nation.
Maybe he didn't talk that way in Rogue Nation.
Surely he did not, because I will not forget it. It was so aggravating to me. Like, the nasally, what, like, weaselly, menacing, whatever, totally doesn't work for me.
It's very, like, it's very grainy. Not grainy, but, like, like he was squeezing his voice through his, like, larynx or something. Like, Ethan Hunt, we are going to...
Yeah, it was
Or, like, he had a really
awful.
Dry throat and just needed some water.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sounds like yeah. me. Sorry, everyone, for coughing all over this podcast. I've been ill.
And so the premise of this particular film is they're looking for plutonium so that they can stop this terrorist organization from doing bad stuff. I mean, essentially, that's the premise of the film.
Yeah, I mean, Rogue Nation, the Rogue Nation was yeah. the syndicate, which was run by this apparently Solomon Lane guy
mm-hmm.
who now has a beard and an aggravating voice. And the syndicate was taken down, but then that has matured into a different group of rogue, disavowed former agents called the Apostles. And you don't know how many of them there are, and they're trying to plot the overthrow of structure, of yeah. government in general. And they're somehow still connected to him, even though he's been in custody ever since the end of that film.
Yeah, which is really weird because Ethan Hunt has dreams about him. And unless he's, like, constantly looking at pictures of what the man looks like, how would he know what his beard looks like?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's a great, great question.
I'm like, why is he dreaming of this man? And why? It's like a man. Like, there should be, like, some Kenny G playing in the background when they're sitting in that car scene together. Yeah, okay.
I mean, it certainly is not like Batman and the Joker.
No,
right? It's you haven't earned anything to that level of connection. Well, between
maybe
these two,
Batman and the Joker in the Lego Batman movie.
Well, you've made a good point.
And then obviously we're also reintroduced to Rebecca Ferguson, who plays Ilsa from Part 5. She is an operative from MI6. And has her own agenda in the midst of all this as she tries to help Ethan at one point. And it's
which
a little...
once again, you don't know exactly what she's doing for exactly. a while, which is the same as the previous film.
And then, like we said, the new characters, Angela Bassett, who is Erica Sloan, and Henry Cavill, who is August Walker, operative, assassin, whatever. They essentially just come in they're like, hey, this is our party. If you want to play, you're going to play in our sandbox and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, they've been on the trail of the Apostles for a while, and everybody's trying to find the arms dealer, of mm-hmm. course, because we love arms dealers in spy movies.
Everybody's an arms dealer in the spy movie franchises. We already know how Tom Cruise is. We already understand, like, Ving Rhames is just Ving Rhames. He's cool. He's hip. He's smart. Like, there's just nothing really else you could say to elaborate on those particular characters. But people like Henry Cavill, I kind of want to talk about this because
yeah,
Henry Cavill was a bit of a dunce in this film for him being this, like, CIA operative who, you know, is known for killing and, you know, just taking out massive amounts of people from the syndicate itself. The man really is, like, not too bright. Like,
to the degree of where you're not doing your job, not bright. Like, I fundamentally don't understand how he survived to make it to this movie. He should be dead. He should not be here.
He's like the henchman, and yet he acts like he's it's like his first day on the job, practically, and they're doing all this stuff, and Ethan Hunt is, you know, showing him and doing whatever. And he's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And he makes off comments. And I'm like, dude, you're like the, you know, muscular equivalent of Fred Flintstone. Like, you didn't seem like he's all there. Like, he seems like he just goes in and smashes things up.
This guy feels like it's Henry Cavill, except he thinks he's Superman in this movie, but he's not.
This feels like it's Henry Cavill, but this guy thinks he's the, you know, the Hulk in this film. Because, like, he's just like, smash.
You know, it's interesting, and I don't want to malign his acting ability, but I don't know if it's because he's doing an American accent, and the only time that he's really done that before is yeah. Clark Kent, slash Superman. I mean, a performer should be able to fully inhabit their character. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. you find some of the people who are like the nice, genuinely nicest human beings in real life play the best villains
mm-hmm.
when they're in character, because they have to completely distance themselves from like their active real life. They have to go into the character because the character is so different from them.
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of thinking, okay, this guy played Superman, you know, truth, justice, and the American way, and all the, you know, like whatever. And so maybe he's going to be a really good foil to Ethan Hunt, because it's obvious in the trailers that they're at odds with each other. They're not just a team together. Like, they have somewhat sympathetic but also oppositional agendas at play. They're only together as long as that suits them both.
Yeah.
And so he could definitely play it well and come across as more than a duncey brawler.
Yeah.
But really, the way that he plays it is just kind of a duncey brawler.
Yeah.
And there are some moments where you can tell on the page, in the script, it's meant for the character to have a standout moment or two throughout the film. But those moments kind of fall flat because, even in spite of the ridiculous mustache, you have a really hard time. I had a hard time seeing past the Superman-ness of all of it. Like, you're not in the right role here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, because to your point about, you know, some of the, like, nicest and probably best people out there playing really great villains. I mean, you look at, you know, one of them in this particular franchise, you look at somebody like Philip Seymour Hoffman, who hasn't really been, he wasn't known for playing roles like that, but stepped into this and it completely just overwhelmed all the audiences when they went to go see it. He just did such a great job.
Yeah.
You look at people like the late Heath Ledger, who played the Joker, and Heath Ledger was never known to play any type of villainous role, and he steps into this and he just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
But the thing with Henry Cavill, so in this particular role, while I was watching him, the only thing I was hoping that he would kind of step into was the role he played in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Because he plays an American.
Oh, that's
in that
true.
One.
Yeah, he does play an American spy.
And I'm like, man, if he could just be like a little bit more suave or a little bit more like not confident, but just together, like he wouldn't look like this walking wrecking ball. And that's what he was to me. Is like he's everywhere he went, he seemed like he was destroying people or wanting to kill people. He was like the loose cannon that you just keep locked up somewhere.
Which is fine if that's what they had him there to do only. But they try to make him more nuanced and capable than that, than the blunt instrument approach.
Yeah.
If he was only there to be a blunt instrument, he did that really well.
Yeah, completely.
But they do try to nuance and somewhat develop the character beyond only that. And that's where it falls flat, because he really is just a blunt instrument. He is a wrecking ball.
What do you think, Spence?
No, he's a wrecking ball. Like, he literally destroys like some walls during this movie. Like, I don't know how else to describe him besides that.
And then, obviously, the bigger thing that at hand, you know, where they're trying to find the remainder of the syndicate. They're trying to stop this whole thing from happening. Here's the problem that I have with the overall structure of these types of films. This franchise, maybe after the third or fourth film, it kind of loses its, in my mind, it kind of loses its luster of the formula. You have a formula where, and I had explained this while we were sitting in the theater yesterday with Spencer, I explained the structure of this film and the formula as government like Ethan. Ethan, or big thing happened, government no like Ethan. Ethan work hard to clear Ethan name, government like Ethan again. I mean, that's literally just how these things roll.
That's like a synopsis of every film in this franchise.
Exactly. It doesn't matter how...
Like, without fail.
It doesn't matter how complex the story is or how far out the storyline goes or who's what and what's what. That is literally the structure of every single one of these films. Like, if you've never seen a Mission Impossible film, Spencer, if you've never seen a Mission Impossible film, the formula I just gave you will literally fit into every single one of the previous films from 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and in 6. And that's one of those things where it's like, you look at it and you're like, okay, it's entertaining, but but has it run its course? You know, like, is this one of those instances where, much like the Fast and the Furious franchise, much like annoying franchises like the Triple X franchise, the Transformers franchise, you know, they all have their own formulas that become overused and then lose their luster. They no longer are, you know, working anymore. Mm-hmm. Could this possibly be one of those types of situations?
They just have to do something different.
I mean, no, I agree 100%.
Basically, what you said, don't do that. Do something else.
I mean, it's okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you've got a certain mindset that says, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, if you're on movie 4, 5, and 6 of a franchise, you need to let the story evolve. And you can see them trying to do that in fits and starts kind of throughout these things. I think the fact that they keep the basic, very broad cookie cutter shape of the story in place, that is to their own detriment. Some of the things that they choose to do within that framework are like furthering and bettering the story.
Yeah.
Bringing back multiple characters. Simon Pegg as Benji has been, this is his fourth film.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a nice continuity because he wasn't one of the foundational characters. You know, Ving Rhames, he was in the first film.
Yeah.
I don't remember him being in the second film, mm-hmm. but he was?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I probably deleted the second film from memory because I didn't
like it. He's the one who finds, what's her name?
Oh, right. Yeah.
What's that actress's
Thandie
name?
Thandie Newton.
Yes, Thandie Newton. He's the one who finds her on the cliff in the helicopter.
Right. So, but, you know, for Simon Pegg to be in 4 in a row, you know, and have consistency with his character. His character does a little bit of the comic relief, but mm-hmm. he's also been evolving. He's wanting to be a field agent now and, you know, whatever. But even then, a lot of what they've been doing in the last 4 films is still making everything so much about Ethan Hunt.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's really aggravating is like, it's sort of like those movies where you've got like galactic strife, but really it all comes down to a family conflict. Like everybody ends up related somehow by the end of it. And it's like, really? Did you need that? Like,
yeah.
People who are fighting in the real world, are they all like immediate family related to each other? No, they're not.
Yes, Spencer.
Okay, well, what's weird about like this movie is that like the villain is like trying to like basically have like these grander schemes of like with manifestos and stuff.
Sure.
But really, it's all about like Ethan Hunt, and I'm like, are you just gonna kiss him and get it over with, or what? Because it was so ridiculous. Like, you're evolving your whole.
There's the Kenny G again.
You're evolving your whole plan, and you're just like having to go out of your way to fit this man who's after you, to fit him into a box to be in the center of your
Ladies and gentlemen, you can't see this, but Spencer's eyes are actually popping like, out of his skull.
Why? It's so much extra work for little. Like, if you want to get rid of him, just get rid of him. Like, throw a bomb at him or something, and then go do whatever you're trying
to
do.
Yeah, versus all of these ridiculously overcomplicated, delicate machinations to also move chess pieces in place in ways that you can't guarantee that's the way it's going to shake out, Lex Luthor, Batman versus Superman.
Plus, when like some of the villains supporting like henchmen are complaining about the plan's complexity, you know you've got problems.
Yeah. Also, when you have somebody like Spencer in the theater who's seen none of the other movies, at the end of this movie, he's like, yeah, I totally got all of it. Because the characters have to explain things to you.
Ooh, all over
this
the
movie
whole
had
time.
So much exposition. Like, at one point in time, there is a character who is explaining to another character the entire plot of part 3
yes.
and part 4
yes.
to this woman, to this person who is sitting there listening. And it's like, you know, he's not talking to her. You know, he's not talking to this woman. He's talking to the audience. He's reminding you, by the way, just so you know, this is going to play a major part of the third act. So just, you know, spoiler warning. Right. Since Spence doesn't want to do the soundboard.
That's not our spoilers. That's Ving Rhames.
No,
spoilers.
I'm saying
he
that's what
his own soundboard.
It's Ving Rhames.
Anyway, like, okay.
That's Marcellus Wallace.
Like, during his, like what happened previously in Mission Impossible, like, I was just listening, and I was like, I feel like the audience should already know this. And I was like, oh, this is for me and people like me who have no idea what's going on. I'm like, oh, this is terrible for everyone who does know what's going on, because you're just waiting at this point for, like,
yeah, for a few minutes.
And then you have people like Alec Baldwin's character. Alec Baldwin playing the director of the IMF. If you don't know what IMF stands for, it's the Impossible Mission Force.
What?
Yeah, Impossible Missions Force.
That's what IMF stands for.
Why is...
That's what they are.
Why is it called Mission Impossible, but it's the Impossible Missions Force?
That's what's just what it's called.
Because that's what He's that's looking, what they do. They do Go impossible ahead. Missions. That's their whole function.
That just sounds backwards. Like, I feel like one of those two things should match with the other.
One of those things is not like the other.
Yeah.
Wow, that was weird. A neat little moment.
And he turns, like, his whole character, because, like, the last time you see him, he's, like, against the IMF. He's, like, he doesn't want to see the success of the IMF, you know, in part four, I believe. And I don't remember seeing him much in part five. And then in part six, he's like Papa Bear to Ethan Hunt. He's like, I just want to, I mean, I'm looking out for you.
And he kind of has to explain why he's there.
Yeah.
Like, to the audience. Once again, he's like, well, I came over here because you convinced me to.
Yeah.
Like, at what point in your life story character, at what point did Ethan Hunt, like, sell you on this, like, value proposition?
Okay, that makes more sense why that moment even happened in the movie. Because, like, when he was talking about that, I was like, what? Like,
yeah, like, irrelevant to this scene. Why are you saying this? It's for people like you, Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer.
But you didn't need to know that information.
No, I didn't. Like, that's why I was like, what? Because, like, I feel like they were trying to explain something that I didn't know what was happening.
This movie just literally phoned in so much of what was going to happen in this. Like, you just knew every time something happened in this film. And let me just say this. I don't know if movies are, like, actually kind of dialing back the intelligence for its audience, or if maybe we're just getting smarter, like, as moviegoers or whatever. I don't know. But all I know is that this film, you know, like, telegraphed exactly what it was going to be doing, like, way ahead of its time.
Way ahead.
Like, this movie should be called Ripping Faces and Taking Names, because that's what it should have been called.
Which, honestly, I don't want to downplay some of the bright spots in the film, though. We mentioned earlier there are a number of really good action sequences. Honestly, that is the reason why I think, aside from something like Mission Impossible 3, which was phenomenal on all counts.
Phenomenal.
But most of the reason you go to see a Mission Impossible movie is to see the physical stunt work kind of stuff. Like the car chases, the fight choreography, the weird jumping onto planes, jumping out of planes, latching on underneath the plane and climbing up underneath, whatever it is. Like, that's really the reason, because there's not a lot of legitimate physical stunt work in Hollywood anymore. It's mostly
CG.
Enhanced at the very least. Or it's a bundle of doo-doo. Like, it's terrible. To see stunt work that's actually thrilling and really well done and not overly post-produced is refreshing at this point. It doesn't excuse the ridiculous storytelling that happens around it.
It doesn't excuse the doo-doo?
It doesn't excuse the doo-doo, but it makes it palatable. terrible. And I there were quite a few good stunt sequences in this film.
Oh, yeah.
And as I mentioned earlier, yes, the indestructibility of Tom Cruise, not his characters, but Tom Cruise, there's a little bit of compliments in that statement because of the fact that a lot of the heaviest stunts that are ever done in any of Tom Cruise's films, he's usually the person doing them.
He insists on it.
If you look at every single one of the Mission Impossible films, every hard-hitting stunt that looked impossible and looked like it just was completely done by a stuntman, it was actually done by him. Most of them.
Parts of them, yeah. The close-up stuff was actually him.
Yeah. And that's impressive for somebody who is pushing into his later 50s, is still well busy in Hollywood doing films where the stunt work is done by the actual lead actor. You look at this particular film, one of the highlights of this film is a helicopter chase that you see in the trailer. So everybody, I'm not saying anything that nobody knows about, but there's a helicopter chase that happens in the film, and there's a particular maneuver that happens with one of the helicopters that actually Ethan Hunt, whom a few weeks prior to, learns how to fly a helicopter. So Tom Cruise actually learned how to fly a helicopter before the filming started, and then he trained for an entire year to perform this one particular stunt, which is called a halo, or a high altitude, low opening stunt with a helicopter, which is pretty much the downward spiraling of the helicopter as it plummets to the earth and pulling up at the very last second. He actually did that. And it's like, it's insane. Like, whoever covers his insurance or whatever insurance company, he's got like a super high premium. Like,
For sure.
But the fact remains is that this man is still very busy in Hollywood, not just as an actor, but when we were talking about earlier, the 3,000 setups, blah, 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 and the one broken ankle, that one broken ankle was Tom Cruise because he jumped from one building to the next and his foot caught the edge and it strained. It caused a hairline fracture in his right ankle. And it's like, dude, you would have thought like, OK, I need to take it slow. I'm sorry, guys. You know what? I'm out of my element. Let's
easily get a thrilling angle of a stunt double and not know that it wasn't him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the fact that here's the problem. I don't like Tom Cruise all that much because of the fact that he's usually the same person. But that's the nature of Hollywood right now. We're not getting actual performances. We're getting actors playing the role of, like we talked about last week, you don't get The Rock playing Will Sawyer. You're getting The Rock as The Rock in the film.
With
a different name. You're not getting Tom Cruise playing Jack Reacher or whatever. You're playing Tom Cruise in the film. Or you're playing Ethan Hunt. That's one of the things with him. And that, you know what? I could look past that and all, but you have to admire somebody who is willing to put in the grunt work for things like that, especially for the entertainment value, in my mind. You have to appreciate that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Well, and it's not just the... I mean, I love that you mentioned the helicopter. There's a parachuting jump sequence earlier in the film. There's car stunts and motorcycle stunts and fighting in various different locales. And it's really... It's nice to see a diversity of setups. Now, at 2 hours and 27 minutes long, does it get a little long in the tooth? Oh, yes. Absolutely. By the time you get to that helicopter sequence, you're kind of really
done.
Beyond done. Like, you're overdone. You're charred and, like, burning to ash kind of done by that point in the story. You're like, can this just end? Why are we paying attention to all of this and continuing with the exposition?
Yeah.
Late in the film. There are quite a few things that are aggravating by the time you reach like the 2 hour mark and you know that you've still got half an hour ahead of you. By the time you get to the climax of the film and the resolution, you're kind of just like, I stopped caring a while ago. You know, things are happening to the characters and their lives are on the line and you're kind of just sitting there like, okay, well, at least it'll be done soon then, right?
That'd be nice. Like in all sense of the word. And then you did hit on something that just really kind of resonates with me in terms of the fact that this movie is almost 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. As an action movie.
Now, here's the problem. Here's the biggest problem. Because of the fact that it conveys every single thing it's going to do, it sends it out and lets people know, hey, this is what we're doing in the next 20 minutes or 30 minutes. You know, this is, you know, just so you know, or we're doing this exposition, or we're doing that, whatever. Because it does that, it makes the length of this film irrelevant. Like, it doesn't, it's not important. Like, you shouldn't have a film this long if you're going to be telephoning everything that you're doing in, like, early on in the film.
Right.
And if there was a little bit more, like, you know, espionage, and there was a little bit more secrecy, and you were a little bit unaware of what was happening and what's going on, I think it would have made a little bit more of a unique film. It would have made it for a more, like, engaging film. Like, oh, whoa, how did that happen? Where did they get that information from? How did he do that? Whatever. But because of the fact that you know what's going to happen, no joke, you could start watching this film, and by the 40-minute mark, you will know how this movie is going to end. And this movie is 2 hours and 27 minutes long. That's sad.
Yeah, you'll kind of twiddle your thumbs in between 40 minutes and 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Aside from some of the action sequences, they really are. Many of them are quite superb.
Yes.
True.
Very true.
Like,
I would love an amusement park ride of most of the action sequences.
Really?
It would be really, really fun.
I don't know if I'd want an amusement
like
park ride.
Like a motion simulator?
Of that, you know, bathroom fight. I'm good.
Well, no, not that. But the cars,
the
car and
scene.
The motorcycles and even the helicopters.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that, to me, really, it felt like it was almost like a video game cutscene or a motion simulator ride.
True.
On the big screen.
And kind of talking about action sequences, just the one that I had mentioned, the bathroom scene, the bathroom fight sequence between Henry Cavill, Tom Cruise, and another individual. That scene was really well choreographed in my mind. Like, the fight sequence, the way that guy was, like, just beating the heck out of both of those guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you believe it.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, it would just seem like Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill had no chance in beating this guy. And it's great because you see Tom Cruise getting beat. So that's that's part of the highlights for me.
It's great because you see Tom Cruise getting beat.
But going back to my previous question, do you guys feel like there's still any juice left in this franchise to continue? Like, obviously, for the sake of money, they're gonna push another one out, and they'll probably push another one out after that, and they'll probably go to space, and they'll probably go back to the future, and Ethan Hunt will probably be like, it'll turn into Looper, and he'll have to, you know, save, you know, fight off his younger self. I don't know. Who knows? Whatever. But in all earnest, like, do you guys think that this formula for these films, do you think that there's still any life left into this formula that you could actually create an actual successful sequel to this?
Well, it really depends on who's willing to pay to see this movie, because
that's true.
Like, watching this movie and watching the audience during, like, a part where I was like, okay, I know what's gonna happen in the next 10 minutes, I'm fine to just, like, look around and see what's happening. Like,
you're eyeballing other people.
Yeah, like, there were certain points where the audience, like, reacted like, oh no, and I'm like, really? Like, you know that's not gonna happen, because that would just make this movie even longer. So that's, like, no. Like if audiences are still getting, like, you know, hyped off this stuff,
yeah,
then they're probably gonna still milk it for a few more.
I think, personally, I would continue to see Mission Impossible movies for a long time, as long as they never get, like, bad, like MI2. But you need to pass the mantle. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I wasn't overly fond of the idea of Jeremy Renner being the heir apparent. Anyway, he was just not the right kind of character, so it's not a surprise that he's not in this movie at all. But the fact that they still don't really have, I mean, unless you're looking at maybe like Rebecca Ferguson's character as a potential torchbearer beyond Ethan Hunt. Mm. Like, I think if they go the way of, let's say, Creed to Rocky, right? They evolve the role of Ethan, which is way beyond necessary. Like, it's needed.
Yeah.
He's becoming less and less believable, both in the sense of like defying physics and gravity and whatnot, but also just to tell the same story every time is boring.
Yeah.
The action sequences are great. The storyline is boring. And it's not from lack of trying. They do a lot to try to intrigue you and get you interested. And they try to put things in there that feel like twists and turns that really aren't, because they're telegraphed way in advance.
Yeah.
So like there's no twisting and turning really. If you're paying attention at all in your seat, there's nothing that's going to surprise you.
Yeah.
In this film. But I would say if they could find a way to pass the mantle to another character and have Ethan Hunt as the mentor guide person, I would still go see it.
Like a Cars 3 situation.
I didn't see Cars 3.
So in Cars 3, he passes the mantle onto the other little yellow car and makes her the racer, and he sits as a crew chief and coaches her.
That sounds about right.
There we go.
Spoilers for Cars 3.
Oh, please. It's been out for God knows how long. What in God's name was that?
Spoiler for Cars 3. You don't know that these people have watched that movie yet?
Spence, just...
You should put that in the episode title.
You know what? All right, before we wrap this thing up, any last thoughts, any last issues, anything you guys want to highlight?
Yeah, like 2 hours into this movie, I was feeling like, okay, we're wrapping it up. And then something happens, and I was like, we're still in this movie for another 30 minutes?
You didn't see me check my watch the entire time we were in that theater.
Oh, no, I did.
I was like, oh, my gosh, we still have another hour. Like, oh, my gosh, we still have another 45 minutes.
All right, let's talk about our reactions to the movie. Because, like, normally Eddie is Mr. There should be no talking during the movies. Yep. He will shush babies regardless of whether that makes any sense.
Right. I will. Like a boss. That's right.
Vehemently shush.
Like a boss. Shush, baby.
Like there is large streams of spittle flying through the air, kind of shush. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
That's guttural shushing there.
But during this movie, the second it hit the 40-minute mark and he figured out what was going on, he proceeded to tell me, and then every 10 minutes was like with quips, like constantly, just talking.
I was dancing during the opening credits.
He was doing that too. He was dancing and talking during this entire movie.
I feel like Ace Ventura right now. I mean, because of the fact that you know what's going to happen, so there's really no point in sitting and watching and not enjoying yourself. And I certainly wasn't enjoying myself watching Henry Cavill become a dunce. Like, hey, you lost your air tank. Like, oh.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I was very angry when he opened his mouth and said that. I was like,
close your mustache mouth.
Oh, gosh. Just punch him in the face. Let's speed this up.
What about you, Chad? Any last minute thoughts?
You know, No. I wanted to say something, but I really, like, I will say, going back to the initial expectation of this is either going to be an MI2 or an MI3. It wasn't. It was another MI4, MI5 kind of thing. Like, you're just treading water, which, again, is a real shame because some of the stunt work is really incredible. Top notch.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely watchable. If you just cut together the action sequences and took the story out, I would watch it again.
I would watch that again and again. And it'd probably be shorter.
And I wouldn't have to care about what the characters do other than, like, they're saving the world. Okay, I get it. Or hoping. They're trying to save the world. But there is a bit of a tease roughly a quarter of the way through the film, that should be a third of the way or better through the film, but it's about a quarter of the way through the film. There's a bit of a tease, like a scenario that does start leaning toward failure.
Yeah.
Like the mission failed. I mean, honestly, the setup is the initial mission is to capture these plutonium cores before the apostles get their hands on them. And for circumstances we won't go into, the team fails to do that. So there is a failure at a certain level at the beginning stage of this story. And then you get an inkling of what failure on a broader scale would look like. And as much as I don't want to be overly morbid, I'm a very positive, jovial, happy guy. That kind of stuff actually would be more interesting. I at that moment, I was like, I don't know that this is legit, but if it was legit, I would be really engaged in this movie right now.
Yeah. It kind of reminds you of, I don't know if any of you had ever seen that Jack Ryan film, Some of All Fears.
Some of All Fears.
It had that vibe at that point. Not to give too many spoilers, but there was that vibe that was there. I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to start working backwards now.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like the tagline. What was the tagline at the bottom of the film title, Spence? Because you were like, some missions aren't a choice or something.
Yeah, that's about it.
Some missions are not a choice. And at first, I had the same epiphany as you did. I'm like, oh, okay. So the not a choice aspect is this has already happened, so they have to work backwards from that.
You gotta
backpedal.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nope. Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's about time for somebody to truly either philosophically or literally or both knock Ethan Hunt on his backside and force him to come back from it.
Yes.
Because all that happens now is like finger wagging and then, no, I'm going to prove you wrong by running and jumping and flying and whatever. And then like you resolve it by the end.
That's funny.
I think that changing his dynamic and giving somebody else the agency within the story to progress the story forward beyond what Ethan Hunt can do as a character. I think that would be really healthy for them.
That's funny. That's exactly the storyline of Cars 3. No joke.
Hit your spoiler alert, Spencer.
Why did I get a boxing bell? So with that, let's go ahead and go around the table. Does the film pass or fail and how many monocles? Let's go ahead and start with Chad.
Oh, great. I'd love to start this off. I will pass the movie. It's passable.
It's passable.
It's not great. It's passable, and I would give it 2.5. Mostly for the action sequences. And like a quarter of that is the mustache, just because why the heck is it there? Nobody knows. But why you can't the heck get around it.
Because he can't look like Superman.
True.
Spencer, what about you?
Yeah, I'll pass this movie. My rating is going to be based on only seeing this movie.
I was
going to
say, you and your
else.
Limited knowledge of...
But yeah, I really did enjoy the action sequences in this movie. They were fantastic. I was actually really surprised. They did a really great job. So I'm going to give it a 3.
A 3?
Yes. That does not really reflect too much on the story itself, because it kind of needs some work.
Oh, well, the film passes for me. As long as it's not as bad as part 2, I think it'll always pass. So if they continue to make movies that are not as bad as that second one, sorry, John Woo. But as long as they're never as
that
bad.
Yeah, they set that bar so low
that
anything is an improvement.
Although Thandi Newton was a good part of that particular film, but that was probably the only shining spot about it all.
Well, and who knows? I mean, before all the reshoots, maybe it was good.
True. I am going to give it a 3. The reason I'm going to give it a 3 is two monocles are for the action sequences. One monocle is alone for the song that isn't even in the film, but it's in
the trailer.
The trailer, Friction by
Imagine Dragons.
So I'm going to give it a 3. But hey, let us know what you think. When you go check out the film this weekend at your local theaters, check your local listings. Let us know what you think about the film. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We'd love to hear your thoughts, so get a chance to go check them out. Before we go, I want to let you know, make sure you check out the latest trailers that have dropped. We've had a lot of awesome trailers dropped out of San Diego.
Yeah, Comic-Con.
From Shazam to Aquaman to Crimes of Grindelwald to everything. So if you get a chance, check them out, because probably next week we may have a discussion here on the show. So who knows? Spence?
Who knows?
Okay.
It's good.
I don't know. I don't know what you're asking me.
So who knows, Spence? Who knows?
But that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Are you Spence?
I am.
Okay. Class dismissed.